comes the sun, little darling. Here comes the sun, I say.
Welcome, this is Manuel Criollo. I'm your co-host for today for Voices from the Front Lines here on KPFK.org and KPFK out in the air, out here in Southern California and throughout the world. It's my privilege to be here today with you to engage everybody out there in radio land about a really important issue, which is the issue around the flight of Haitian Dominicans and Haitian people in the Dominican Republic facing mass deportations and a stateless sort of rule. So today we're going to have an opportunity to talk about what is happening out in the Dominican Republic and what is happening to folks of Haitian descent, and really hopefully get a bigger conversation going on about this issue, about how deep the anti-Haitian, anti-Black racism that has had many iterations out in the Dominican Republic, and of course the Dominican Republic, which is virtually a colonized island nation state, and what we're witnessing in some ways is really a racist anti-Black streak and meeting almost 500 years of white settler culture in our continent, and has come full force. And I think for myself as a Latino and for folks out there as progressives, I think it really is one of these places where Latinos and La Raza and the many people of and nations of Latin America and the Caribbean need to take a stand to reject racism and white supremacy. And this is it. Anti-Black racism and white supremacy must be challenged to the core if our people to be ensured our own place for social justice and for true emancipation for Latin American and Caribbean peoples. And for that, we're going to be joined with Roberto Lovato, who's a writer and visiting scholar at UC Berkeley's Center for Latino Policy Research. Roberto, who's been a recipient of crisis reporting grants from the Pulitzer Center, his journalistic work really spans the entire hemisphere and centers around issues around border smashing issues of our time, immigration, the drug war, national security, race and racism, language and politics and climate change. And Roberto has just recently returned from the Dominican Republic and has written two important pieces on the website Latino Rebels and The Nation. One is called The Slow March of Mass Deportations, Is Dominican Immigration Policy Being Obamafied? And you can catch that at Latino Rebels. And then more recently on The Nation, he has a piece called The Ghosts of 1937 Are Warning Us, and The Past Feels Dangerously Present as Deportation and Silence Devastate Haitian Life in the Dominican Republic. You know, as I said earlier, we want to dedicate this show to this conversation about what's happening to Haitian Dominicans, Black people in the Dominican Republic. And in some ways, I wanted to at least open up. I have been thinking a lot about this and writing some pieces that I'm hoping to come out and publish very soon, about how to think about this. As everybody knows, really the origins of this go way back in terms of the history of the Dominican Republic and Haiti. But in its most current iteration has been the issue around a 2013 Supreme Court ruling by the Dominican Republic Supreme Court, where basically they retroactively said that any person of Haitian descent who was born in the island before 1939, in essence, would have to prove their citizenship or have to prove that they have a Dominican relative or a parent, and that, in essence, leaves many people of Haitian descent in the Dominican Republic to be stateless and with a possibility of deportation. That process ended, the process to regulate for most people, which maybe there is the account of about maybe a half a million Haitian people who live in the Dominican Republic, if not more. I mean, again, this question about who's really going to have to prove who's Dominican or not, while some people could say it's going to be your accent, it could be your last name, in reality it's going to be your skin color, and it's going to be Black people who are going to face, which of course the irony in this question is, as many people from the Dominican Republic who come to this country, and they, even though they might not perceive themselves to be Black, once they come into the United States are tagged as being Black people in this country. So I really wanted to, at least before we come in with Roberto Lovato, some thoughts that I think are important for us to think about. One is, clearly we need to denounce what is happening in the Dominican Republic. We need to show all the solidarity with people of Haiti and people, Haitian immigrants and those of Haitian Dominican folks. And, you know, I think obviously for many Latinos here, for many progressive people, you know, the parallel of what is happening to Haitian Dominicans and Haitians in many ways is very parallel with what's happening to many Latino immigrants here in the United States. We are talking about the mass deportation and locking up of immigrants. The United States is not free of exclusion. Now, has there been a massive ruling? No, but there's been definitely different states, different federal attempts to try to undermine the whole full humanity of people. And here in L.A. County alone, for a long time, L.A. County was collaborating basically with ICE, with La Migra, and we're deporting tens of thousands of people here in Los Angeles. So clearly, obviously, I know that one place that we have a lot of unity is about why we're going to denounce this. And I think that's great. And that in many ways, of course, that, you know, we've basically have suffered almost, you know, the last 16 years, both under both President Obama and President Bush, of mass deportation under what has been called Operation Endgame. You know, obviously, the second thing for us, I think that there's a lot of unity out for us, is this issue about racism and the long history of what we're seeing in the Dominican Republic. In some ways, obviously, it's a deeper reflection of white supremacy in our continent. It is no secret that the Dominican Republic and Haiti have been the victims of European colonialism and U.S. intervention in their countries. They're not fully sovereign, independent countries. And then much of the ideology that many of our peoples throughout the continent are pushing forward are the politics and the ideology of white supremacy. So I think there's going to be a lot of unity among the movement to talk about those things. I think where I think some things that I want to raise with folks, and hopefully we'll get some feedback at the end of the show, and I will give out the numbers soon for people to chime in. One of the places where I think we do need to at least begin to push about some issues within our community. One is to break the cycle of making this only a primarily economical issue. In other words, a lot of people would say, well, what's happened in the Dominican Republic, as we've seen in the last 150 years, when there's been cycles of anti-Haitian ideas, anti-black ideas, is that it's merely an economic valve issue. In other words, that the pressures that the country is facing, that you need an escape boat. And you hear this a lot from a lot of, especially white progressives or even progressives in this country, who talk about putting the sentiment of anti-immigration within the contents of sort of a economic argument. And I think that we really do need to push ourselves to really dig more deeper about the anti-black racism that exists in Latin America and among a lot of Latinos. When I was in college, I remember that a lot of the things that rubbed me really hard about being in Latin American studies was that people would argue, look, in Latin America and among Latinos, our racial identities are much more fluid, are not so rigid as the ones you see in the United States, where there's a one-drop rule here in the United States. If you're one-drop rule of being black, you're considered black. But in Latin America, you could buy yourselves into whiteness. If you have the economic pool, you can buy yourself into whiteness. There's this level of, at least I would say, some folklore acceptance of our multiracialness. But I think the underpinning of all of that is under white supremacy. And I think it's important for us to really break that notion that somehow we are immune of both racism and white supremacy, when in reality, much of our identity has been really enmeshed in that. And so I think that brings me to the last point that I want to talk about. It's that in our own movement, especially I would say this is at least my observations of a lot of the immigrant rights movement, that we need to understand deeply that some of the main core arguments that we're often making around why immigrants should stay in this country, why immigrants' full humanity should be accepted, which of course we all should be there, we hear a lot of the same arguments that I would say at the core are to, we have to more deeply dig deeper to understand, are they anti-black messages even in the messages that we ourselves are doing? In other words, when you hear the argument, a purely economic argument, to say, well, we're just here to work. Well, who are we saying that don't want to work? Are we saying black people don't want to work? We're saying other people don't want to work when just Latinos want to work. I think we got to really push ourselves to dig deeper about what unemployment in this country has meant, especially black unemployment, and that there is a whole, really a counterinsurgency of unemployment for black people, and Latinos need to take more responsibility about that unemployment. Yes, we don't hire the people. We're not the people who own the means of production. We're not the managerial class who decides who gets hired or not. But we're sure have the responsibility to say that in a country that was built on slavery, that we'd have to address at least the coreness of issues of unemployment among the black community. The second piece is about to make the argument that we're not criminals. Well, then who are we saying is criminal? Especially when we look at the kind of Jim Crow system that we have of the criminal injustice system in this country. And when we know that 1 million people are black people are in prison, then we have to really dig deeper about what is criminality in this country. And I think as Latinos, we also need to, again, think about what is the messages that we're ultimately saying about how we want our full humanity wants to be accepted. And the last piece about that I think is important for us to at least push and have this conversation, and I'm hoping that this is the conversation we can all have, is that in some ways, much of what our arguments about staying in this country is to argue that this country is a country of immigrants. But in reality, when we dig deeper about the history of this country, it is not a history of immigrants. It's a history of a white colonial settler state that was built on slavery and genocide. And I think, again, for our own people, we have to be able to understand that these are the sort of underpinnings of what we're trying to build and what kind of movement we're trying to build. And with that, we will be joined by Roberto Lovato. Again, Roberto, who's been, you know, an important public intellectual, writing a lot about the war on immigrants here in the United States, that a very bipartisan attack that's happened both by the Bush administration and definitely by the Obama administration. He is one of the founders and of Presente.org. And Roberto has just been in the Dominican Republic and has written two important pieces, one in The Nation magazine called The Ghost of 1937s Are Warning Us, and also another, I thought, really excellent piece in Latino Rebels called The Slow March of Mass Haitian Deportation, which is, it says, the question he rhetorically asks is, Dominican immigration policy being Obamified. Really great pieces. And Roberto, are you there?
Yeah.
Hey, Roberto, how you doing? Good to hear from
you. I'm all right, Manuel. How are you?
Good, good. So, Roberto, you just came back from the Dominican Republic, is that right?
Yeah, I got back a
little. So, I try to give some underpinning for folks. Why don't we talk about at least the history that you were able to be exposed? And I know, given some of the work that you've been doing in Latin America, you must have had a broad exposure to this even prior to going to the Dominican Republic. But let's talk about what has been the wave of a lot of anti-black, anti-Haitian sort of ideology that's played throughout the history of the Dominican Republic.
Well, I look at that, but I also look at things in terms of the wave of statelessness that's taking hold around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, you have in, according to Antonio Guterres, the head of, refugee policy for the UN, saying that statelessness has become a, quote, cancer, with over 10 million people being rendered stateless. So I'm not real good at reducing things to race solely,
mm-hmm.
nor ever, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of have a broader lens than that. I include race in my analysis, but I kind of go a little far away from the reductionist analysis of race as a determinant, as we're seeing in the United States right now, where we don't have a lot of discussion about kind of the economic situation, the economics behind white supremacy. We're barely talking about white supremacy, only in its extremist variants. But we're not talking about it in its more liberal mainstream variants. So I try to broaden my lens. So I thought it was important to go to the Dominican Republic, country I've been to before, and look at what's going on for myself, and to bring folks along with me if I could, through the writing. I also wrote some pieces for The Guardian UK, so just to be clear. And I wrote like four pieces.
That's awesome.
So what's taking place right now is partly real crisis, partly manufactured. Real in terms of the lives and the bodies of Haitians and the Dominican-born children of Haitians right now. And, a lot of discussion in the mainstream media has been pretty erroneous and just mishmashing things that are kind of related but kind of not. Like the issue with the children being denationalized, having their Haitian citizenship taken away from them, which is similar to children in the U.S., the proposal to take citizenship away from immigrant children, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same, similar to that, to the Tea Party kind of proposals we were seeing here in the U.S., and it should come around election time again, if I'm not mistaken. And then, and on the other hand, you have an immigration issue that's more recent, where the state decided to, quote, regularize 500,000 people, but did not provide the infrastructure, the papers, the promotional resources, anything to really make it happen in an effective way. And as a result, with the second group of people, the people that are in danger of being mass deported, you know, you have hundreds of thousands of people now kind of in limbo. So between the stateless, the potential statelessness problem, and the potential for mass deportation of people who weren't able to regularize their status, you have a real crisis. Now, there's also, I mentioned a component that's being manufactured, and that's the state threatening to mass deport people, right? There was talk of buses. There was talk of even some people here in the United States talking about concentration camps, all of which are absolute total falsehoods. There were no mass busing of people, you know, and mass deportations. Many people were deporting themselves and riding public transportation or their own cars. Many people are in hiding and waiting to see what the government does. But there was no going door to door and, you know, putting people in concentration camps, as even thoughtful left-leaning liberal people were saying. So, and that, I think that was a ploy. In one of my articles, I wrote about that. I think it was kind of a ploy by the state to mask and diminish and divert attention from the real issue, what I think is the real issue on the deportations, which is that they're instituting an Obama-like immigration system in Dominican Republic. You know, I think that I had some friends help me to get some Freedom of Information Act files and memos and other documents from the government. And I found out that the fingerprints of the Obama administration are all over the mass deportation of Haitians. The Obama administration has provided training to the military, to CESFRONT, the Dominican Border Patrol. The Obama administration has provided weaponry, equipment, surveillance equipment, and get ready for this, drones to the Dominican government so that they can fly them over the border, which you can go see them there now. If you go, there's like several drones. We don't know how many the U.S. actually paid for, because those documents would take more time, if ever, to get them. You know, it's the Obamification of the Dominican immigration system, a mass deportation system that makes you feel kind of good at the end, because you're doing something with a first of something or other. So it's kind of, you know, we have all this race talk in the United States, and we've completely lost any sense of the racial dynamics in having Obama basically be the one that's equipping the people that are denationalizing, training the people that are deporting, and providing political support to immigration, border enforcement, and military that are raping women, that are raiding homes, and perpetrating other violence against Black people, Black Haitians. Okay, and so I wonder how many people are still saying, God, I can't say anything against the first Black president. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember that when Obama first got elected.
Mm-hmm. We're listening to Roberto Lovato, who's written some really important pieces. He's just came back from the Dominican Republic to be a firsthand witness of what's playing out since the deadline for Haitian Dominicans and Haitians to, as you documented, this issue around regulating them and registering themselves into this new process that the court decided on, this issue around all those who were born from 1939 or before to prove their citizenship or prove that they were born in the country, and to figure out, you know, some process to regulate under whatever new sort of rulings and laws that have been implemented in the Dominican Republic. Let me say, I think you're right in that the first thing, as I said when I first opened up, clearly there is, as you're saying, we are living in a system, in a country, in a world system that is in massive economic crisis. And this issue around migration, immigration, is happening on so many fronts. And again, at the crisis of that, it is the crisis of a system that inherently is trying to squeeze money at any cost, and that is going to really push the question around mass migration and what happens to immigrants throughout the world is going to be a massive question that everybody will have to respond to. So I think in there, I definitely think that is the thing that's playing out. I guess in the question that I guess I did open up with, which was the issue that and you hit it on the point in your piece on The Nation, that this is not a current iteration of what's happened in the Dominican Republic. This has been the back and forth that's played out in the Dominican Republic around the kind of violence and the kind of sort of, you know, for the lack of a better word, ethnic cleansing that's played out for black people and Haitian people in the Dominican Republic. How much of is that a real conversation that's happening there? Not so much that it's happening now, but that is the sort of long sort of court of history that is playing out.
The angel of history is kind of continuing to crash and burn in the Dominican Republic. I was in a place called Dajabón, which is right there at the border with Haiti. And like any border, you start seeing kind of the fissures, the erasure of the straight lines that they're trying to put up. And you see, if you look close enough, the history. And one of the things that I saw and that I wrote about was the amount of talk people, whether it was Haitians or Dominicans, talking about what the Dominicans call a corte, which the Haitians call a cut, which is basically both means the cut, which refers to the genocide perpetrated against people of Haitian descent and even Dominicans who were suspected of being Haitian in 1937, when the dictator Rafael Trujillo, a guy who was a mulatto, born of Haitian grandmother, officially designated himself white and brought basically the state with him. I mean, it doesn't go back to 1937. It goes way back to mm-hmm. the 16th century,
mm-hmm.
the racial classification system. So that needs to be clear. It's not just 1937.
Right.
It's just one of the spikes
right.
in the racial history is 1937, when you have somewhere between 9,000 to 20,000 people slaughtered by their government. And that was accompanied by both a racial kind of whitening of the border, so to speak, so that you have the Dominican state using Haitians to create this white identity for itself and bringing the Haitian culture with it in many ways. I mean, the Dominican culture with it in many ways. I mean, you have similar processes going on in Haiti, in Haitian history, and we can talk about that, but in the case of the DR, it's also called La Matanza by some. The court of the Matanza is still there. You can talk to people. I spoke to, you know, a woman whose grandmother basically did like a Schindler's List in terms of saving two girls who were Haitian by putting them in a tree and feeding them for like a week until the terror subsided. And she was, you know, this is a woman who's active in an organization called Solidaridad Fronteriza, Border Solidarity. And she's actively working to help Haitians in the present, but she's triggered to think about what happened and the story she heard in her past. And her organization also just finished celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Matanza last year. And so I don't think you can really understand what's going on right now without looking at what the state was doing with Haitians in 1937. And it's not a repeat, as some people, I think, mistakenly tried to make out. And, you know, I'm sure they may have been well-intentioned, but there was no mass concentration camps. There was no mass deportation. There's deportations going on. They've been going on since before this. I mean, they deported like 40,000 people even before all this happened. So, you know, mass deportation is happening, but it's more like Obama, not like Trujillo. But you really can't really understand what's going on without looking at 37 and what that causes. I just imagine what's going on in the heart and the soul of Haitian people, like the ones I interviewed. One young woman who told me she felt like, I'd never heard this phrase, and I thought it was so perfect, but sad at the same time, was cívicamente muerta, civically dead, because she was one of these stateless, soon to be possibly stateless people. She was basically being forced to find documentation that she might not have, and that if she doesn't show she has, she's going to get not have a country that she belongs to, because Haiti doesn't recognize her. She wasn't born there, and the Dominican Republic might not recognize her if she doesn't show her papers. So you have to look at the way that the state works, and then the way that has an interaction with the population generally and the culture. You know, I mean, I interviewed the governor of Dajabón State, And she's in one of those articles, in the one in the Nation mm-hmm. on 1937. And right. this Governor Rodriguez, who in the United States, if she can't step foot, people would just say, this is a black woman. This woman was spewing out stuff about Haitians, about how aggressive, quote-unquote, they are, and how they're violent, and explaining away in the same, out of the other side of her mouth, how in 1937 it wasn't Trujillo. She was an apologist for Trujillo, and she was there overseeing the system of deportation in the present. And so these kinds of stories, I think, get us at the complexities that are at work that I tried my best to understand, but there are people far better than I, than me, who can break these things down.
We're speaking to Roberto Lovato, really an important intellectual of our time, really been writing a lot about Latin America and the war on immigrants and here in the United States. And as you can hear, he's just fresh coming back from the Dominican Republic to report on the deadline that passed from the Supreme Court decision in the Dominican Republic for Haitians and Haitian and people of Haitian descent to prove their citizenship and to and left them in a place of statelessness. And as you said earlier, Roberto, one of the things that I really do want you to sort of talk about is, and I know you did in the beginning, was this issue around the Dominican military border patrol called the CES Front, right? As you were saying, that you had some friends support you to get the public information about the kind of resources that the United States itself is investing in the Dominican Republic's own plan around rounding up immigrants. And as you just said earlier, this issue around, the massive deportations that we can imagine, like, Operation Wetbag, or that have been akin to have happened here in the Southwest, have not happened in the current manifestation. But what has been playing out, as I read in your article, has been a much more state-sponsored immigration enforcement that is as aggressive of doing raids in homes and separating families as we know.
We just have to remember, we live in the age of Donald Trump. We live at a time when many Latinos right now are here feverishly angry at the racist, clearly racist, offensive, and stupid comments of Donald Trump. And I just kind of look at that, and I share those sentiments to a degree, but I am astounded that the same emotional, the same passion, the same vigorous response is not shown by either many in our community who are just regular people or quote-unquote leaders, or the institutional leadership like media and some elected officials don't show the same righteous indignation at, for example, the death of Anastasio Rojas in San Diego, beaten by like 20 Border Patrol agents, or the killings of all these people at the border, innocents, the deportations of 2.2 million people, more than anyone ever in the history of the Western Hemisphere, or the mass jailing of hundreds of thousands of people with no criminal record who are innocents, but who were declared criminals, quote unquote, by the Obama administration. Or why no anger? You're doing psychological damage when you call Latinos or Mexicans or anyone a rapist, a criminal. You do psychological damage to that community, but I would argue that you also do psychological damage to children when you wake them up with a ICE agent pointing a big 12-gauge shotgun in their face, looking for their mother, talking like a rabid dog about where's the Mexicans, where's the illegals, as I've interviewed people throughout this country talking about. I don't see the indignation about that. I don't see the labeling of the person responsible for this in any way, shape, or form near what the way we talk about Donald Trump, which is Barack Obama. Nobody talks about Barack Obama as if he's doing any damage to our community, really. There was a deporter in chief and stuff like that, but in comparison to like this whole thing with Donald Trump, I'm astounded. Anyway, I'm sorry to go off on that rant, but had to get it out. So we live at this time where the state and its agents know that they're operating in a mediafied environment, in an environment where there are more cameras, there are more social media outlets, there's more ability to affect the public discourse if you know how to do it. So they're very clean to that. And so we're not going to see the mass deportation systems of the Bracero program. We don't need them anymore because you can deport more people than the Bracero program using the Obama method, right? Say, si se puede, raise up Cesar Chavez and have some people from the USW say you're a great guy, and you get away with it. So in the same way, the Dominican state has learned that it can port people along the same lines in the same ways, using the same weaponry, using the same training. I mean, the Dominican Republic embassy was one of the first embassies in the world, U.S. embassies in the world, to get a border patrol attaché, someone who is there, quote-unquote, coordinating with the domestic, in this case, Dominican border patrol, when in fact what they're doing is developing strategy, implementing systems, conducting trainings, and acting like kind of U.S. military trainers, which in effect they are, because right. Remember that immigration is now, after the Pentagon in the United States, the most heavily armed enforcement body in the United States. You know, more than the FBI, more than almost any other branch except the Pentagon. So migration has been militarized. So, you know, nobody's any the wiser for it, because everybody, including my colleagues in the media by and large, bought the idea that there was going to be some sort of a mass deportation of buses and concentration camps, which the Dominican state pivoted and hinted at, but never implemented, because it was never intended to, because I went to one of the military bases where they were going to set up these camps. What you have is basically a mini version of the Karnes County family detention center. These, you know, same style architecture, same fencing, same, you know, kind of training for the people that are going to be running it. So they're running a deportation system a la Obama, and we none of us even saw it.
We're talking to Roberto Lovato, who has just come back from the Dominican Republic, has written some few pieces out there in the Nation, the Guardian, has written a piece for Latino Rebels, talking about what's playing out in the Dominican Republic. We do want to open up this show at the end of the show, and I just want to give out the number for now, at 818-985-5735. I want to hear from you. I want to hear what folks have been hearing. I know here in LA we have a small but boisterous group of folks from the Dominican Republic and from Haiti. It'd be great to hear from y'all. Definitely, again, this is your show, and we want to hear from the people at 818-985-5735. Roberto, I wanted to end with this, because you did open it up by saying that in some ways, you know, your point of view is that we need to understand this beyond the boundaries of race. And I understand what the core of what you're saying, that basically imperialism as a system doesn't inherently care what race you are, but it is going to extract whatever it needs to extract to make its profit. On the flip side, at least in this case, and I guess I would sort of in some ways do bring parallels to what has happened to the United States, I agree. Most people will react to incendiary, you know, disgusting forms of individual act of racism rather than look at the heart of what is playing out, of how national oppression and racial oppression plays out, where it's the extraction of your rights, it's the extraction of you not having a full citizenship that's defended and protected, that in fact is the way that, you know, a state can extract more profit from you. But at the end of the day, though, it is particularly folks of darker skin and black skin, in at least in this case in the Dominican Republic, but we can make that argument pretty much all throughout Latin America and here, even here in the United States, that are facing these particular types of attacks from the state. They're not just independently economic or just independently sort of a motivation of strictly profit, when there is a specific form of anti-blackness that it does exist there. Do you agree with that, or is that not what you agree with?
I just need to be clear. I think I've talked pretty thoroughly about race, and it's as part of the problematic we're seeing. What I was cautioning against at the beginning, and what I sustain, is that I avoid reductionist talk of race as the way that the United States does right now. Just look at the way, for example, the United States is going through a kind of being reborn as a black and white country again. You know, you have the Confederate flag, and you have, you know, the black community fighting against the Confederate flag, and everybody else kind of just watching, right? The country has perceived itself as black and white, and those of us that are kind of neither or both or whatever are not really part of the discussion on the national level. And therefore, our issues aren't in the table on the national level. You have no national Latino commentators really on any national issue of any consequence on any major national media. Okay? Foreign policy or domestic. Either we're genetically wired to be inferior and not able to talk about things, or something else is going on. So I refuse to fall into deterministic, simplistic, and what I think base discussions of race. What I do think is that race forms a part of a complex of systems that the state and the economic interests that support it deploy and use and are very aware of. And so, like I said earlier, the Dominican state is clearly using Haitians in a racial way to build itself, right, and to build Dominican identity in contrast against Haitianness. That's been the case for a long time, but the Dominican state built itself as a white state that was non-black. I mean, if you look at some of the core parts of the Dominican state are Catholicism, militarism, and anti-Haitianism as a core components of that state, in addition to kind of the economic model that they pursued around sugar and how they positioned the Haitians within that economy and how, to have economic mobility, it wasn't to your benefit to identify as black. Just like in El Salvador, after the Matanza of 1932, mm-hmm. which I went to go do some research on, and I have family that kind of was involved and witnessed it, mm-hmm. The state racialized itself in an anti-Indian way, mm-hmm. right, and an anti-black way to a lesser degree because there was a larger Indian population in Salvador. So, I think race is fully a part of the problem. I just don't bring it down to being the problem that defines the everything. Right, the way the United States seems to want to talk about it and therefore exclude all manner of analysis and people in the process.
We're speaking to Roberto Lovato, just came back from the Dominican Republic, has written some really important pieces. I really encourage people to go check them out. One of the big pieces we're talking about is The Ghost of 1937, Are Warning Us on the Nation, has written pieces in the Guardian and also in Latino Rebels. I think this conversation, Roberto, we'll pick another time to continue it. I do feel that there is a real set of unity that I think needs to be drawn, at least for everybody in what is happening in the Dominican Republic, is that there is a war against migrants and immigrants throughout the world because of what's playing out economically. Even environmentally, our folks just came back from Bonn, Germany, where again the U.S. is playing a role to undermine any real possibility of any agreement to try to bring climate justice to the world. I do think, though, when you're raising this issue around, especially for Latinos, when we want to try to address what is happening in this country, I do think that there has to be some set of ongoing conversations about how racism is a major factor, not just in sort of like trying to hyperbole version of it, but in some ways has a life of its own that is even beyond just an issue of an economic imperative, and that in many ways there is a war of genocide that's playing out in this country among many people, but black people in particular are facing it. And I think is that a real conversation that we're going to all have to be engaged in, just as the demands around really putting justice and open borders for immigrants in this country that are facing a lot of prosecution, a lot of destruction, as you described earlier. I don't think they don't necessarily have to be separate, but they definitely have to be engaged in very similar ways. I know you have to go, but I really want to thank you for joining us today. And again, I really want to open up this. You're listening to Voices from the Front Lines. I'm your guest for today, Manuel Criollo. You're listening to 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 San Diego, and all those for you out there on kpfk.org. We're going to open it up to some radio folks who are calling in already and to be engaged in this conversation. Again, I really want to thank Roberto for joining us. You're listening to KPFK.org. This is Manuel Criollo with Voices from the Front Lines. We are now opening up the lines here on KPFK. The number is 818-985-5735. We just had a conversation with Roberto Lovato, who just came back from the Dominican Republic, to give sort of firsthand testimony of what's playing out. I had some opening thoughts about, you know, the role of our own movements here in the United States to address anti-black racism that exists in our own movements. And I want to at least open up for the lines. And I know we have a couple of callers. Why don't we open up with Tony from Long Beach, to who wants to share some thoughts?
Yes. Manuel, are you there?
Yep. Welcome to Voices from the Front Lines.
Yes, thank you. Is Roberto still on the line?
He is not.
Yes, I'm on the line.
Oh, he is.
Oh, he is. Great. Because, okay, he's on the line. You know, both your points are great. Your points are very salient. I'm African-American. And, Manuel, you opened up with great points. And, Roberto, yes, to be reductionist and to go in a real truncated way about boiling it down between black and white is missing the point, because we're living in a very complex society. However, Roberto, keep in mind, I know this for sure because I was very much involved in solidarity work at one time in my life. It is more acceptable for black people to accept Native American, Latinos in their blood, in their family, in their culture, than it is the other way around. Mm-hmm. There's a heavy hostility, and you know it, Roberto, don't live in denial. There's a heavy, heavy deniability that Latinos have having any type of connection with blackness. They're afraid of it. They are very white supremacist captive, more than black people. So Manuel's point is very true. Now, the other point I want to mention real quick is in regards to, I feel, why there is a deportation of Haitians back to Haiti from the DR is that there are very cheap, labor-intensive, flexible labor markets that the European and American corporations have, and they need to man that more. That's the reason why they overthrew Aristide. They need to have cheap labor, more influx in Haiti, more than what they already have. So they need. So that's why the Obama administration is deporting with the collusion of the DR to fill the cheap manufacturing plants in Haiti.
That's Tony, right? Tony from Long Beach. Thanks for your thoughts. I think those are really important points. I think, you know, one of the things that this deep issue around how I think we as Latinos do need to address anti-black sentiments and prejudice in our own hearts, and in many ways also, I think because we live in a country that is where the racialized structure has been so clearly defined around genocide and clearly defined around a very anti-black sentiment that's been at the core of this country. Yeah, I do think for people here in the United States, we need to begin to at least be truthful and be honest about what is playing out to black people in this country. And I think in many ways, what has been at the core of what is happening in Dominican Republic, we have to understand it that way. And I think you made a great point about this issue around, you know, the DR, and in fact, the Dominican Republic is part of the CAFTA, right, which is the only country in the Dominican, in the Caribbean, who joining the Central American countries who signed the agreement with the United States around the CAFTA, and at the core has been both how to get, you know, extract cheap labor from both Dominicans, or whatever Dominicans want to identify themselves. But of course, at the heart of it also is about the extraction of Dominican Haitians and Dominican immigrants who are also doing the cheapest of work in the Dominican Republic. And of course, to not also understand that Haiti, the first freed black republic in the world, in the Western Hemisphere, is also to understand that it's been an undermining of both colonialism and the United States that's undermined those countries. So we got a lot of callers out here. Why don't we have Alberto, who has been holding online, to join us here on KPFK. Welcome to the show, Alberto.
Yeah, first of all, I wanted to thank you very much. You know, from hearing what's being conversed over the area, it's important for us to know that, number one, it's a shame that this is occurring in the Dominican Republic. It's time for the United Nations and Central and South America be involved directly with that nation, because this is horrifying what's occurring. And secondly, real quick, and I'll get back, I think that, just out of curiosity, a separate subject but along the same line, is about Donald Trump, this racist pig. What are Sacramento leaders doing to be able to voice their dissatisfaction with this individual that continues to air racism every day and he's literally getting the airtime organized the media that this is the reason why Charleston is based on this
Thank you, Alberto. Thanks for those thoughts. And we lost you a little bit. I think you were raising even the issue around Charleston and Donald Trump. We're going to move to Angela. Welcome to the show, Angela.
Hi. I'm Afro-Brazilian, and I wanted to chime in about the silence and also the open border issue. I don't think there has been silence. My understanding is that NBC was deluged with protests and that figured into their cutting contractual ties with Donald Trump. So when Univision cut their ties, then NBC cut their ties, and there'll be more. I think eventually he'll be forced to sell his interest in the Miss Universe pageant, and I would imagine that some of the Latin American contestants will also drop out. I think that's just a matter of time. So that was due to widespread protests direct the networks hearing directly from Latino viewers. Secondly, on the question of open borders, is there ever a limit to any justification for limiting the number of people that can come into a country? I think that if President Obama would just open the borders, that he would have been decimated by that politically, and I think also the Democratic Party would have lost the working class, period, because we're also crushed by unemployment, and I don't see how that would possibly work out. Lastly, the president of Senegal offered the Haitian people citizenship in his country and also offered to transport people to Senegal, which is a French-speaking country, and my understanding from friends I have in Senegal is that there are about 50,000 Haitians living around the capital of Senegal and actually integrating and doing very well. So maybe repatriation to Africa is something that could also be considered. Anyway, I'd like to have his feedback on any of those questions.
Well, thanks, Angela, for sharing for us. What we go to Damani. Damani, welcome to Voices from the Front Lines.
Good afternoon, man. Yo, this is Damani.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Just wanted to make some brief comments. First of all, I just wanted to acknowledge you and commend you for keeping white supremacy and imperialism at the center of the analysis on the Dominican Haitian question. And also, I just wanted to say, I think there's a relationship between what's happening in Charleston and the Confederate flag and what's happening with the immigration policy in terms of violation of human rights. And I think that you're on the right track in terms of keeping imperialism and white supremacy at the center of the conversation, because I think those connections need to be constantly made, because a person like myself who's an African in America who has citizenship, it doesn't end with citizenship. You know, Trayvon Martin was a citizen.
That's right.
Juan Davis was a citizen.
That's right.
And these other shootings where these individuals have been shot unarmed were citizens. So what I would like to communicate and conversate with the dialogue with the Latino community about is the relationship between unarmed shooting and inhumanity and violation of civil rights and immigration policy, and how that's perpetuated in these unarmed shootings and these mass killings. Dylan Roof in Latino church and shoot up 9 people. They're the citizens. Mm-hmm. So I say that to say that we can't let it be isolated, and I appreciate you forwarding that conversation and not letting the guest, who I don't agree with on everything, not letting the guest minimize it.
Thanks.
Even though he had a different philosophical view.
I got That's you, Damani. I appreciate your words, man. All right, let's move on to Elizabeth. Welcome to the show on KPFK here, Voices from the Frontlines, Elizabeth.
Thank you. I don't know if you can hear me well.
I can.
It's a horrible reception. Anyways, I am I'm calling because the Dominicans have always accepted and taken the Haitians. This is going on for centuries, as you mentioned, and we lived in harmony there all the time. But after the earthquake,
I'm calling because
Can you hear me?
Elizabeth, you need to turn off your own radio off.
Yeah, the radio is off. The thing is that after the earthquake, half a million Haitians moved to the Dominican Republic. There's no border there. They moved to the Dominican Republic. They have been living there and working, but illegally, you know. It's not that term. I know that this is horrible, that term. But all the Dominicans want is to legalize their status in the Dominican Republic in order to let them then have their jobs and be part of the society, you see?
Well, thanks for that, Elizabeth. I mean, you know, I think, obviously, you're a Dominican, and I think, obviously, I appreciate that you want to call in and engage in this conversation. You know, I definitely think that, you know, this conversation is for all of us to have, and it's not just a problem in the Dominican Republic. It's going to be, and I think what I do agree a lot with what Roberto was saying was raising that these kind of issues, I think, are bound for all peoples of the Americas to have to face. And in many ways, we here in the United States shouldn't sort of look at Dominican Republic and say, look how reactionary the politics of the Dominican Republic, when the United States itself has been, you know, implementing a war against immigrants and really a war against a lot of oppressed people here within the boundaries, the borders of the U.S. But I guess the question that I think I more deeply wanted to raise today for today's show, and hopefully, as you know, because we need to wrap up the show, that I want to at least for everybody to sort of take in, is that I do definitely think that at least in this case, and I think in many and at the heart of I think of many of Latin American countries, we do have to address the anti-black streak that it does exist in our own ideology, in our own homes, and even in our own movements. And I think, you know, again, while you might say it's just for migration purposes, it's clearly certain people of certain types of skin tones, certain people with certain types of accents are the ones that are going to be inherently being targeted by these new laws. So with that, again, I really want to thank everybody out there who gave really important calls. I really want to thank Roberto Lovato. Please go check out his articles, really important sort of firsthand sort of pieces that are going on. I really want to thank Kiana Turner and Stan for helping us out here, because y'all have been busy calling in, which is a great thing. Kiana, who's been on the boards. I really want to thank our producers, Crystal McMillan and Eric Mann, and Chani Martinez on all the beautiful designs. And please check out our website at voicesfromthefrontlines.com. Tune in next week. Eric will be back. And so stay tuned for Background Briefing with Ian Masters.
It's a new day. It's a new life for me. Yeah, it's a new dawn.